What is the Maisa Avot Siman Labanim? I want to discuss of this title, How to Live in Galus. Which of the Avot symbolizes that? Clearly it's the Av of Yaakov. Yes. He had to live with Lavan. He had to live with Esav. He had to go through the challenges. He spent most of his time. We didn't want to start till you came. So I'm giving a prelude, a point. So he was the Av of the Galut. There's no question about that. But there is one parsha of Yitzchak that also dealt with Galut, which is the parsha of the Be'er. The whole parsha of the Be'er of Yitzchak, back and forth with the Yitzchak digs a Be'er. They come to him and say, "Get out of here." Then he goes somewhere else. Then
digs his father's Be'er.
And then he goes over there. They follow him there, and they say, "What are you doing here?" And then they want to make a brit with him, and he says, "Why do you want to make a brit with me? I thought you hate me." Atem snei temoti. And then he says, "No, because Hashem was with you. Ata baruch Hashem." And then they make a brit. So what's going on? So I wanted just 2 points of how to deal in Galut. I think both of them is an idea that we have to settle in with the concept of it. We're not so comfortable with it. But the concept of a Jew in Galut is supposed to be the Jew in Galut. We have to remind ourselves we are not at home. And we are not comfortable. We're not meant to be comfortable. And when we're uncomfortable, we don't have to shy away from it and try to make it comfortable. We have to make it work, and we have to live, and we have to survive, and we have to know how to deal with it. But ultimately, the Galut is meant to be uncomfortable.
Not being sovereign, not being
under our own authority, not living in Israel. Living in Galut means not living in a state where we don't sense. We don't sense the living of with Hashem like we should. Okay, so. The story of the Be'er of Yitzchak goes like this. Yitzchak has a lot of sheep and cattle. Tzonu bakar. Vahi ki gadal Yitzchak. Vahi gadal ish me'od. Ad ki gadal me'od. It says really a lot. And the Ramban points out, he did not have, it doesn't say that he had gold and silver like Avram. It said he had tzonu bakar. Then it says, Vahi kan'u oto plishtim. The plishtim were jealous of him. It doesn't say that by Avram Avinu. So the Ramban explains that what happened is that Yitzchak called too much attention to himself. He had gold and silver, he put in a Swiss bank account, it's quiet. Okay, good. He's got his money, he's a wealthy man, that's fine. Avram. That's Avram. Yitzchak, this is the industry of the land. Everybody is doing tzonu bakar, and Yitzchak goes ahead and he says, "I'm going to do tzonu bakar, and I'm going to out tzonu bakar you. I'm going to have more than you have." And this is the land of Tzonu Bakar, and the Jew comes in, and he's in the industry that they're in, and then, before you know it, he's ahead of everybody. Right? And he's doing the thing that they're supposed to be doing better than they are.
On their territory.
It's one thing you become wealthy, you're not bothering me. But now, this is what Ramban basically says. Now, you're making me jealous. Vayikanu oto. They got jealous. This is the first thing in Galut. We're not supposed to call that much attention to ourselves. You have to know in Galut, stay a little bit under the radar. And we're not very good at that. We're not. What?
We're not.
We're not good at that. I was going with a non-Jewish guy, Cholomoid Sukkis. We took a boat down the intercoastal and then into the back of these islands. Star Island and some of these other islands, and this guy who's driving the boat is telling us about each house, exactly like each house and what and he knows literally who owns each house, and he tells us a story and how it was the guy bought the house for $70 million, then he knocked it down and then rebuilt it for another $100 million. So you're talking about there's a $200 million estate over here, one after the next. And he's telling us, and the guy himself says, one after the next, this guy's Jewish. 70-80% of the houses were Jewish. 30% had sukkahs even.
Wow.
And then I felt like I was in the middle of a musar shmooze, because then the guy, one of the sukkahs there, the wind came and knocked it down or shtickle. And the guy's like, he has an $80 million house. Can he just build himself a nice sukkah? it was like the classic yeshiva rav, like schmooze, like, you know, here you are, you buy yourself your expensive car, and then you cheap out on the lulav, you know. So, but like, we're not very good at staying under the radar. But this is the Amais Avot Siman Labanim. What happens? We call attention to ourselves. Then they get jealous. Then they kick us out. That's exactly what happened with Yitzchak. Then what happens? They realize it's not so good for the economy to kick them out. So they go and try to find us and say, hey, right. You know, well, let's make a brit together. And what does Yitzchak say? Batem sneitem oti. You hated me. No. We don't hate you. Ata, Baruch Hashem. Everything's good. We love you. Baal Turim says, there's only one other place in the Chumash that it says, ata, Baruch Hashem, with a shva. Not Baruch Ata, Baruch Hashem. You are Baruch Hashem. Where's the only other place in the Chumash? Here it says, by Avimelech, come, you are Baruch Hashem. Where's the only other place that it says that? Says the Baal Turim, when Lavan greeted Eliezer. You are Baruch Hashem. And then the Baal Turim says, just like Lavan wanted to kill Eliezer, Avimelech wanted to kill Yitzchak. He wanted to kill him. He's just coming and making a breach with him. And this, what does it tell you? Don't get carried away. Don't get carried away. They just kicked you out. And they don't like you. But they realize they need you. So they come and say, oh, you're a brook. You have to be able to understand what they're really saying. Right? What they're really saying is, we don't like you at all, but we need you, so let's make a deal. So what does Yitzchak say? Yitzchak knows that. So I know that you hate me. You know that you hate me. Okay, vayochlu, vayishtu, let's make a brit. Everyone's good. You got to play the game. But don't get carried away and think that they actually like you.
Avraham didn't have this problem?
Avraham does not say in the Chumash that he had this problem.
And Yitzchak only became rich when Avraham passed away?
Yeah.
It seems that as soon as he passed away, then everything went like...
Right, but the stress that I'm making is because his wealth was in a way that called too much attention. So it got them jealous.
He was flaunting it.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
Sure.
Anyway,
and Yaakov also. He started to grow his flocks. Lavan became infuriated. So he said, like, and his kids, his son started talking. He said,
right,
look at
our wealth. Right. So there's definitely such a thing, and I think that's a very important Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim. Very, very, very solid one. I think it's a very solid point, okay? There's another Maaseh Avot Siman. Okay, let's leave that. Let's get into the Chanukah now. But that was just a nice, I thought, important point. If that's the title of the shir, so we see it in the parashiyot of the weeks as well. So let's discuss Chanukah. We are already within a few days to Chanukah, 10 days, a week. So,
exactly 10 days, 15.
Yeah, it's coming up. So there's a Gevaldika Rokeach. The Maaseh Rokeach was a Rishon. And he says the following. He says, if you look in the Chumash, in Parshat Emor, Parshat Emor has in it all of the Mo'adim. All of the Chagim, we read it on Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, everything is in there. The last Chag is Sukkot. Right after Sukkot, it tells you that in the Beit HaMikdash, they lit the menorah. And it tells you you should use Shemen Zayit Zach and light the oil. Why does it switch? Why does it go straight from Sukkot into talking about the Beit HaMikdash? Why? So the Rokeach says, because it's coming to tell me that aside from the De'oraita Chagim of Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuot, and all that, there will be another Chag, which is also going to be 8 days like Sukkot, and it's going to involve the menorah, and that's Chanukah. So as a matter of fact, the remez of Chanukah is in the Chumash itself. Even though, as we know, Chanukah came way later, and it's only rabbinic in nature, Derabanan, but it's actually, there's a remez to it in the Chumash. There's a remez to it in the Chumash itself, that Chanukah comes after Sukkot, has to do with the menorah, and it's going to be 8 days. So my question I want to deal with today is, what is the connection between Sukkot and Chanukah? How does it relate one to the other? And we find another place that Sukkot is a mention of Sukkot in Chanukah. Anyone know? It's in the Gemara. We don't pass like that, but it's in the Gemara. You know, Beis Hillel says what we do. You go up every day. 8, 1, 2, 3. Beit Shammai, 8, 7. Why? 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. The first night, 8 candles. The second night, 7 candles, etc. That's Beit Shammai. Why does Beit Shammai say that? What's his source? Beit Shammai says, because just like the Parei HaChag, the Parim, the Korbanot that we bring on Sukkot, we start with 13 Parim, 13 oxen, and then we go down to 12, 11, 10. So you see, we go down. So he proves how you light Ner Chanukah from the Korbanot of Sukkot. So you see again a connection between Chanukah and Sukkot. Apida Arizal as well. Arizal says that part of the tikkun, I don't know what this means, but part of the tikkun of Sukkot you can fulfill by Chanukah. I think that people know that whatever you could fulfill at Hoshana Rabbah, you could still do till Zot Chanukah, till the 8th day of Chanukah. So there's definitely a connection, Sukkot Chanukah. So I wanted to think about a little bit, what is that connection? Okay? So there's a Yesoid from the Bala Ikrim and others that there's three pillars of faith of Klal Yisrael. One is Hashem's ability to perform, to control the world. Hashem created the world. He's Bore. Hashem is Bore Olam. There's another one. Hashem controls the world. Mashgiach. He controls the world. He didn't just create the world. He controls the world as well. And the third one is that he communicates to the world through Torah. Clear? Bore, Mashgiach, Torah. So the Ikrim says that each one of those pillars is represented by one of the Yomim Tovim. Pesach obviously represents Bore Olam. He created, and therefore he created. If he created water, he could turn it into blood. If he created frogs, he could bring them all here.
I think Mashgiach on the Olam is Pesach. He's involved in the activities. He can change this. He can stop this.
I think the main point is more the total control over Teva. That Teva doesn't exist. Nature does not exist. It's Hashem is the one that created the world, and that's why he can make it do what he wants it to do. Sukkot, a Shavuot obviously represents Torah, and Sukkot represents that Hashem watches over us. We're in the Midbar, He protects us, He gives us Anane HaKavod, He protects us. That's Hashgacha Pratit, Hashem protects us. Okay? Now, the first two principles never change. Sometimes we see it more, sometimes we see it less. But really, there's nothing changes about that. Our relationship with Hashem through Torah is the same now as it was in Shavuot. Our relationship to Hashem through knowing that Hashem created the world, Hashem created it, that's it, He did. We know that. That emunah doesn't change. But what does change is, the only one of the three pillars that changes is Hashem's hashgach over us. Because sometimes it's more clear, sometimes it's less clear. During the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it's very clear. The Gemara says, right? You would walk into Beit HaMikdash, 10 miracles on a daily basis. There was tons of miracles. The Hashgach of Hashem is sometimes very clear. Sometimes it's hidden. There's Hester Panim. Hashem is in a state that He hides Himself from us. And what's our job at those situations? We have to go find Him. Right? So in a way, this is what happens. So what happens? So let's talk about the let's talk about what happens. So we were in the Midbar. We experienced tremendous closeness to Hashem. We go into Eretz Yisrael. We have Beit HaMikdash. We're promised we're going to get Beit HaMikdash. We experience tremendous closeness to Hashem. And even when we lost the first Beit HaMikdash, but we knew it was only going to be for 70 years. And after 70 years, we got back the second Beis HaMikdash, and we're back in Eretz Yisrael, and it seems to be a pretty good situation. But there was what happened was that in the times of the Yevanim, things got very dark. The Yevanim started taking over, and they defile the Beis HaMikdash, and it brings in a tremendous era of darkness. And it brings in a tremendous era that we don't see the Hashgacha Pratis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu anymore. We don't see in the Beit HaMikdash itself. But, we don't see it anymore.
But outside of the Beit HaMikdash, it wasn't so
But here, but oh, we always had the Beit HaMikdash to remind us.
It's like a burning flame.
Right. The Gemara says, why do you bring the Maaser Sheni? Why do you go to Yerushalayim for Maaser Sheni? So you could go and get Chizuk. But now you're going to go see what? The Beit HaMikdash is Tame. The Yevanim are controlling it. We don't have even a source of getting Chizuk. We're in complete darkness now. So we start forgetting or thinking to ourselves that basically the closeness that we felt to Hashem the entire time till now is diminishing and it could be over. And maybe our whole relationship with Hashem is at stake over here. To the point that the Ramban writes about the Chashmonaim. Listen to these words. Who were the Chashmonaim? Hayu, this is the Lashon of the Ramban in Bereishis. If you want to look it up, it's chapter 49, Pasuk 10. He says, Hayu Chasidei Elyon. The Chashmonaim were tremendous Chasidim. They were tremendous Tzadikim. V'il Molehem. And if it were not for them, Nishtakcha HaTorah V'HaMitzvos MiYisrael. The entire Torah and mitzvahs would have been forgotten from Klal Yisrael. Does not say that by any other time period in the Jewish people till now. This is the first time it says such a thing. The entire Mesorah was at stake. Why? How long do you think, just historically, how long do you think that the gezeiros of the Yevanim were? The Yevanim made gezeirot. You cannot keep Shabbos. You cannot do Brit Milah. You can't do these things. You can't learn Torah. How long do you think it was going on for? Couple years?
More.
7 years? What?
More. 70?
52 years. Huh? 52 years.
It was in effect for 52 years before the Mechashmonaim.
Yeah, that's what Rambam says, yeah. So 52 years. Now think about 52 years. Yeah, in the grand scheme of history, what's 52 years? But if you're a person living there, it skips a generation.
Generation.
Think about the Russian Jewry. Think about a Russian Jew that he never saw Bris Milah. They never saw... the only thing they saw somehow or other was Simchas Torah for some reason. That the Russians allowed there to be Simchas Torah.
It was a party. Drinking.
Yeah, but it did serve as a connection to some people. But the point is that there was an entire generation. They wiped... Right? The Russian... Now imagine that Russia... Whatever happened in Russia... was not just happening in Russia. There was nobody else outside. That was where all of the Jews lived. So, right? What happened in Russian Jewry? After everything stopped, people would sneak stuff in. People would come in from the outside to teach. You know, Rabbi Shapiro from North Miami Beach, so his father, he had just had his yard site. He was a Talmud of Rabbi Aaron Cutler and everything. So his father used to go to Russia to teach. And sneak stuff in, and it's tremendous stuff written about that whole entire time period in the late 70s, and when they would go in and they would start doing the whole underground, and there was a whole entire underground world, and if you read about it, it's unbelievable with the KGB, they were following them around, but they wanted the Americans to think that they allow religion. So when an American were coming from the outside, they would kind of have to be a little more lenient about his own stuff. But if he would try to teach it to the other Russians, they would get really angry. So they had to, so he brought in four pairs of tefillin. So four pairs, that's bad news, because why are you bringing in four pairs of tefillin? So he says, oh yeah, of course I need four pairs of tefillin. One for me, one for my wife, one for Shabbos, one for weekday. So they let him bring. They couldn't stop him from bringing it in, right? And then when you leave, they wrote down that you brought four pairs of tefillin. So when you leave, they want to check that you have four pairs of tefillin. Otherwise, you left it for someone here. So they had made four fake pairs, so he could take them out. It's crazy, you know. But imagine that wasn't just in Russia. How long were the gzeiros for? Less than 50 years. About that time, about that long, right? So 52 years, there was no Bris Milah. 52 years, or at least they made a gzeira against it. I don't know if that means that nobody did it. But that means that the entire Mesorah of the Jewish people, of Judaism, would have been stopped, eradicated. El molehem, if it weren't for the Chashmonaim, the Ramban says, Nishtak Chatur Yisrael, there will be no Torah left. My Mashgiach and Pesek Yeshiva used to always say, well, how could that Ramban say that? Doesn't it say that the Torah will never be forgotten from the Jewish people? How could the Ramban say, if it weren't for them, it would have been forgotten? We already have a promise that it's never going to be forgotten. The answer is that is the promise. That Hashem will make sure that in every generation, there's somebody that will make sure that it's not forgotten. That's exactly the point. But the point is that the Gezerah was so strong that it would have been forgotten completely. So this is the epitome. This came to the lowest point in Jewish history, essentially. That they forgot about Judaism.
152 years without practicing Judaism.
Right. And that's an entire generation.
So the Beit HaMikdash is non-operational.
It's two generations.
It's Tomei.
No, but 50 years of it non-operational, or it was operational, but they couldn't do shit like that.
They really couldn't practice. I don't know what they were doing, what they weren't doing. I'm not sure. But a child that was born in that state, and then all of a sudden he's 50 years old, and you tell him, oh, by the way, this Shabbos, you know. So it was very close. So now, now what happens? We learn from Hanukkah that Hashem will not let that happen. That's one thing we learn from Hanukkah. That Hashem will not let that happen. Hashem will not allow someone to come from the outside and destroy the Jewish people, destroy the Masorah, destroy the tradition. The tradition will pass on. And even if it's only one family that's holding it, but from that family, we'll be able to rebuild and everything will grow again. And I think we saw that in our generation, or whatever, in the generation before. After the Holocaust, so all the yeshivas in Europe were destroyed. And one would think that perhaps, that's it, the whole Masorah of yeshivas, which started from the Vilna Gaon in the 1700s and lasted for 200 years, and the Masorah of giving yeshivas to having yeshivot and all this, at least in the Ashkenazi world, was completely destroyed.
After World War II.
Yeah. What happened? Two, three, four, a handful of Rosh Yeshiva came. European men with long white beards that have no shaykhis to the United States. They come to foreign land. And all of a sudden, here we are 60 years later, and there's more yeshiva bachurim and avreichim learning Torah now than there ever was in Europe before. Whatever that we rebuilt now in 70 years since the war was more than whatever they had in Europe. It's a nace, unbelievable nace.
Does it more?
Yeah, way, 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 way more.
Way more?
All the yeshivas in Europe combined, all of them, all the yeshivas, who are the greatest Rosh Yeshivas in Europe you ever heard of? Chafetz Chaim, Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Baruch Ber Libowitz, Reb Elchanan Wasserman, Reb Shimon Shkop, the Altar of Slobodka, the Altar of Kelm, the Altar of Navardik, put all the yeshivas together, it's less than half of what there is in just BMG in Lakewood. And in Lakewood itself, there's 100 yeshivas besides BMG. 100 yeshivas. And that's not Bnei Brak and that's not Yerushalayim. So what we have here is way more than there was in Europe. And it took 200 years in Europe to build that up, and it got destroyed quickly. And all of a sudden, the three, four Rosh Yeshivas that came from Europe to America rebuilt it to the point Hashem made a nes. It got rebuilt to the point that, so Baron Cutler says, that's part of the nes of Hanukkah. Because part of the nes of Hanukkah is, why did Hashem make it where's the remez to this part of the nes of Hanukkah? Or Baron Cutler says beautifully, he says the Yevanim were able to metame, desecrate all the oil. They missed one jug. Potluck, what, they missed one jug? It's impossible. They can't get all of it. There always has to be the one jug that from there you can go make more oil, and from there you can go light up everything else. Hashem will never allow it to get down to the bottom and miss and lose out everything.
Even the Chashmonim, when he said it leaves one man standing.
Right. So there's going to be that one family that's going to be able to rebuild it, and there's going to be that one jug that from there it's going to light it up. And Hashem is never going to allow that, but we have to find the jug. If you don't look for it, you're not going to find it. If you don't have that one family that's willing to stand up, you're not going to have those Rosh Yeshivas that came and said, we're dedicating ourselves to rebuilding the Torah of Europe, The Torah that we had till now, it's not going to exist. So you need to have that. But there's a promise and we'll have it. Right? So that's part of the Hanukkah. So part of Hanukkah is the goal is hard and the goal is difficult and we have the challenges, but we also have to know Hashem will not allow us to get lost, and Hashem's Hashgacha Pratis over us will always remain. So what I think...
So it basically means that we have a commitment that there is a... that there will always be an opportunity.
Yes.
And then we have to decide who will take that opportunity.
Right, exactly.
You can also remember that before any light, there has to be darkness. So to understand that when you're in darkness, you're just about to...
And more than that, the purpose of the darkness is to reveal the light that's really there. The reason the darkness was put there was to be uncovered in the end. So the opportunity will be there and we'll find it. So what I think is that if you think about it, also I was thinking about it, in the Al HaNisim, we've mentioned multiple times a phrase that we refer to the Jewish people that's pretty uncommon. Is the Siddur there? Before I get it carried away, I'll make sure in your Nusach it's the same as in our Nusach, my Nusach. So in the Al HaNisim, there's a phrase, it says like this. Yeah, thanks. It says, Achar Kain, after that, Ba'u Banecha Lidvir Beisecha. Your sons came, Lidvir Beisecha. Right? We also say, right. So it's not so common that we refer to the Jewish people as Banecha. We should refer to them as Amecha. Ba'u Banecha Lidvir Beisecha. So the Mefarshim would say, why are we referred to as the sons of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Because the same thing. As far gone as a son gets, he's always the son. He's the son. The son is the son. It doesn't make a difference. Well, so the idea of Hanukkah, at least part of the idea of Hanukkah, is that we have a promise from Sukkot that Hashem watched over us. And what we have to remember in Hanukkah is that no matter what happens, He's watching over us. And even when it gets to the point that it doesn't even seem like there's a way to continue, He's watching over to make sure that the last seed will never, that there's always going to be an opportunity for us to remain, to hold on, and keep growing. So the point is that there will be galut, there will be difficulty, but the sukkis that Hashem promised us remains even in the dark times, and there will be light at the end. And Hanukkah reminds us of that. There's that one jug of oil left. There's that one family left. There's always going to be that's from there's going to come the Geula. And from there's going to rebuild everything. And it always happens. No matter what, it will always happen. There's, by the way, just on the point of the Maisa Avot Siman Labanim, we said in last week's parasha, the Yaakov Avinu split the Machaneh. And he says, why? This way, if Esav destroys part, the other part will remain. So how did he know? Maybe if he destroys part, he'll destroy the other part also. It says, "Vaya hamachane hanishar lifleita." It will remain. How do you know that? The answer is because he knew that Klal Yisrael cannot be fully destroyed.
You can destroy part of it.
Yeah, but you can't destroy all of it. He knew. He knew what we're saying. Yaakov Avinu also knew it. But then you have a question. So then, what do you have to split it for? If he knows that you can't destroy it, why do you have to split it? So the obvious answer is you have to do your shtadlut. But there's a little deeper point, which is, it's telling us in the pasuk, how is it going to remain? The way it's going to remain is you may not be able to remain where you are. You may have to go somewhere else. And that's like, in other words, you may have to split up. But where are you going to go? You may replant somewhere else. And there's going to be another machane. And that's where it's going to work. So let's take an example of this. Maybe European Jewry got basically destroyed. But then Hashem promised that the Jewish people will remain, but not necessarily in the same place. So you have to replant them somewhere else. Now we come here. And by the way, this idea that I'm getting off topic, I'm just getting here, it's very fascinating. There's a story from Reb Chaim Volozhiner, very famous story. Actually, the Lakewood Rosh Yeshiva at our Chanukah Sabayis, when we dedicated the new building that we're in, the kolon that we're in now, he said this over. But basically, that Reb Chaim Volozhiner in the 1790s, Reb Chaim Volozhiner said that the yeshivas of Klal Yisrael went on 10 galuyot. It went from Bavel to North Africa to Germany to Europe to here to there. And he said the ninth one was in Lithuania. That's where the yeshiva, the main yeshivas were in Lithuania. And he says the 10th place is going to be America. Mm. It's documented in the Sefer Aviyah Yeshivas. Aviyah Yeshivas, 1790. There's not a single Jew in America then. It was George Washington was still alive.
Well.
And this is documented in the Sefer Aviyah Yeshivas. Aviyah Yeshivas is the biography on Reb Chaim Volozhiner. So over there, that it brings down this story. That he said in the year 1790 that the last that the yeshivas are going to be replanted eventually in America.
Was Israel
Galus? Israel's not Galus. The yeshivas in Israel is not considered a Galus. They're already where they belong. That's not the Galus of the yeshivas.
Israel's still Galut.
It's Galut, but I don't think he's referring to that. They made it back home already.
You were saying before how Hashem does not have a special Gacha. We know that he watches over Israel. So how, if it's a machlok, you're saying that...
I'm not saying he doesn't have special Hashgacha. No, I'm saying there is Hashgacha to make sure that we're safe at the end. To make sure that the kiyum of Klal Yisrael remains, there is Hashgacha. So...
Is Sukkot the open miracles?
Sukkot is the Hashgacha Pratis. But Chanukah is that the Hashgacha Pratis never runs out.
Even though it seems dark.
Right. The Hashgacha Pratis is still there. And that... Hashem is directing it and making sure that we're staying, that there's a kiyum to Klal Yisrael, that the Klal Yisrael will remain. So he started that. Which pillar of Emunah is that? That's the pillar of Hashgacha Pratis. So it's the same pillar as Sukkot, but it's just expressed differently. Sukkot is when everything is great and we have the clouds of glory, but what if it's not so great? There's still Hashgacha. And the Hashgacha is to make sure that the Jewish people stay strong and they will rebuild and they will always be able to be that way, that strength. There's an unbelievable Marsha. How many of you know the segula to say Elokah demeir aneni if you lose something?
Yeah, Moroccan's not very well.
Three times. Yeah, so it happened to actually this Motzei Shabbos. I was learning with someone, I couldn't find my notebook where I had my notes to prepare my shir. I couldn't find it. I sat down with Mechavrusa. Mechavrusa says to me, "What's the problem?" I said, I can't find my notebook. So he says, "Okay, I have a special connection. I'm good with Mayor Balanes." He put it in, said his thing, go back to your office and look for it again, and I found it. Nice to show you. This is what's a show.
Did it happen for you?
Yeah. He said, it worked. I don't know what it is, but I have my neshama's there. It works for me.
You're convinced.
What should I tell you, man? Maybe I'll give him the Zer Simpson. So the Gemara says, Elokah Demeir Aneni. Do you know the story? The story was basically that a few people were running, the Romans were very strong, and they were running after the guards and this and that. And Remeir says to the guards, "You want to save yourself? Just say Elokah Demeir Aneni." And he got saved from the Romans at that time. So the Marsha asks a very powerful question. He says that the Gemara says you're not allowed to say Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak if Yitzchak was still alive. You can't say Hashem is my God on someone that's still alive. It's not appropriate. So that's why Rashi asks, how come Yaakov Avinu was allowed to say Elokei Yitzchak? And he gives an answer. But you're not allowed to say Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak while the person is still alive. Because it's disrespectful to Hashem to say Hashem is the God of this person while they're alive. So the Marsha says, how is he allowed to say Elokah Demeir Aneni? It's not appropriate. My God. And what about everyone else?
But Rav Meir passed away.
He was alive. He was telling the soldier to say this. Oh. He was telling the soldier who was running away from the Romans to say this.
And Rav Meir was there.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is Marsha's kasha. How'd you know? Oh. Okay, so the Marsha says that it doesn't mean Meir my name. Meir was a remez, but he says the Lashon is Elokah Hashem. D'meir einenu b'yimei hayivanim that he lit us up in the days of the Greeks, that we thought it was very dark, and we were in the midst of the Golos, and he was watching over us in the days that
what he is
should.
He light?
It's a verb, not a noun. Meir. He should light up for us. It's the verb. Eloka Hashem de Meir. He gives light even in the dark times. When did he show that light? The light of Hanukkah. That's what the Marsha says. So he will take us out of the gullus of the Romans as well. And therefore, you were running away from a Roman guard. Remember about how Hashem lit us up during the gullus of Yavan. Eloka de Meir Aneni Anupshat. In this famous, and it's a Marsha. Marsha's pretty solid. She says, Marsha says, that's what it means. Eloka de Meir, and the God who lights up the Galuyot for us should light up this present challenge as well. So Chanukah is what gives us Chizuk, that in whatever challenge we're facing in the Galut, Hashem does not allow the Yid to falter. Does not allow us to fall so deep that we can't get back up. Hashem's there, He's holding us up. Sukkot is when everything's great and then we're protected and it's not so bad and it's wonderful. But that the Sukkot, the message of Sukkot lasts even when it's, and we're like stumbling and we're not sure, that's Hanukkah. And that's the Lakad the Meir Aneni. That's the Marsha says. And by the way, that I think according to this, it's very understandable. It always bothered me. How come in Ma'oz Tzur, we say the Ma'oz Tzur after, Ma'oz Tzur, so if you don't know what it means, the Ma'oz Tzur goes through each of the Galuyot. Hashem Ma'oz Tzur Yeshua. What? So you it starts off Fine. It talks about you had a Beit HaMikdash. Then it says Rod Savanafshi, that's talking about Mitzrayim. What?
Aman Ben Amad.
Yeah. Chasov, very good. Okay, so then it says, "Dvir Kotcho of Yani, you brought me back to the thing and to Beis Hamikdash, and then Gam Sham Lo Shakatati. I went to Gulz Bavel. Then Krot Kamat Barosh is Haman. Then the Yavanim. Then Chasov. Then now our current Gulz. Why are we mentioning all the Galuyot now? You know, we lit Hanukkah candles. Oh, and Hashem, we had a lot of Galuyot. What's the connection? What's the Sheikhis? So according to this, very good. We had a lot of Galuyot, and throughout each Galut, you redeemed us. That's the Hanukkah candle. We're lighting the Hanukkah light. Hashem, you lit up for us every galut. Every time we were faced with a galus and we weren't sure, are we going to survive it? We're not going to survive it? Are we? Maybe this is it. We're in Bavel, we're going to stay. No. The same light that lit up Hanukkah lit us out of that galus. And the same light that lit us up from every challenge, that's the light of Hanukkah. No matter how deep the challenge, there's the pintle of yid, whatever. There's that connection with Hashem that can never be forgotten. And that's what we say, Chasov Zeroa Kodshecha. We're going to come back as well from the Galut that we're in now.
But this is not a plan. This is just a reassurance.
It's a reassurance.
You can have the Chaskila say, whatever happens, it's going to work out. But when you're in the darkness, you can have hope and not despair. Like Joe put it,
we're guaranteed to have the chance. You know, like the guy, the Davin Soshem, you know that famous joke, right? Save me, and the parachute comes, no, I don't want it, a boat comes, I don't want it. Why don't you save me? I sent you the parachute, I sent you the boat, I sent you the car, you didn't go in it, right? So that's the same thing. The opportunities will be there. Hashem is guaranteeing us that the opportunities for survival will be there.
And this is all on the community level, this is not individual.
Probably to some degree.
It seems like everything we're discussing is all on a grander level.
It's more on a grander level of the Jewish people, but there's a way to attach oneself to that. To try to attach oneself to that.
And you can also say that the whole Chag, the whole salvation is Emunah.
Yeah.
Someone wants to bring down the Emunah in order to see salvation.
Right. It all has to do that. So I was just thinking one other point. An interesting point about Sukkot that is unique to Sukkot more than any other Chag. On Sukkot, we do a lot of things to mimic the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. Right? We take lulav 7 days. Really not supposed to. Only the Beit HaMikdash took 7 days. We go around the bima like they did. We take the aravos like they did. Make simchat Beit HaShoeva like they did in Beit HaMikdash. Every other chag is the opposite. We don't do what they did in the Beit HaMikdash. You're not supposed to eat roasted meat. You're not supposed to, because maybe it looks like a carbon. Pesach, you're not supposed to do what they did in Beit HaMikdash. We don't make shtei halachim like we do. So all of a sudden, Sukkot, Rabbi Tzisiyahu Salman pointed out, we do things that they did in the Beit HaMikdash. Why? Because we want to remind ourselves of the good times. Sukkot reminds us of Hashgacha Pratit.
It's good times.
And it's good times. So we want to remind ourselves, this is what the good times look like. Right? Chanukah, Dafka, we do exactly what they did in the Beit HaMikdash. We light the menorah. Same avoda. We try also to remind ourselves of, we're in the Galut, but they will be back to the good times. And therefore, we also do the avoda that they did in the Beit HaMikdash. So, just the chazar over, so we said, we brought down the Rokeach, that says that there's 8 days of Chanukah, parallels the 8 days of Sukkot. We said the Arizal, the days of Sukkot, continue through Chanukah. What's the connection? So he said the connection is that Sukkot represents the one pillar of Emunah. Each Chag represents one pillar of Emunah. The pillar of Sukkot represents the Hashgacha Pratis. Chanukah was 52 years of an entire generation, almost forgetting about Torah. And there was one family that stood up. Rabbi Aaron Cutler says that that's represented in the one Pach Shemin that was saved as well. That Chanukah represents that eternal promise that no matter what the Galut is, Hashem will never forget about us. And the Hashgacha Pratit will remain no matter what. We just have to find it and we have to take advantage of those opportunities and give Chizuk. That no matter what the Galut is, we will always be able to reconnect. We said that's why it says, Ba'u Vanecha. Because we're the children of Hashem. That's the Meir, right? And look at the Meir. Hashem lit up the night in Yevanim. And therefore we have the time of Sukkot. Ma'oz Tzur is reminding us that throughout the Galuyot, Hashem always lit up every single Galut.
What's the Banecha thing?
That we're called Banecha in the context of Chanukah.
Because
a child can never be forgotten completely. And I think, let me just finish and then we'll just wrap up. So one last thing is that the Rokeach says, I was just thinking one question to wrap it up. The Rokeach says that since there's 8 days Sukkot, so therefore we do 8 days Chanukah. But there was no 8 days of Sukkot. I thought Sukkot is 7 days. And then there's Shmini Atzeret, it's the eighth day. It's a separate Chag. So it's not a good parallel. Good question, right? So I think the answer is, because there's a famous question about Chanukah also. Famous question. Chanukah should only be 7 days. Because the miracle was 7 days. So I think that the answer is like this. What does the Shmini Atzeret represent? Shmini represents the actual relationship with Hashem. So the Shmini Atzeret is the actual relationship of Hashem. And then the 7 days of Sukkot represents, because of that relationship, Hashem takes care of us. So I think the answer is, the 7 days of Chanukah, that should have been, that's Hashem took care of us. He made extra miracles. But there's one thing that, besides that, to answer the question, why is it 8 days? But why did Hashem make a miracle for us in the first place? The miracle was 7 days. It's true. But let's commemorate something else. That there was a miracle in the first place. Why was there a miracle? Why did he do a miracle for us and not for anyone else? Because we have this eternal relationship with Him. So the extra day is the same as the extra day of Shmini Atzeres. It represents the fact that Hashem did the miracle for us in the first place. It represents the actual relationship.
The first day of Chanukah?
I don't even call it the first or the last, but the point is, yeah, maybe it's the Zos Chanukah. Maybe that's the point. That the eighth day is, maybe, I don't know which one, but the extra day is that day that represents the actual relationship itself. Now, because we have the relationship, we were zochet to miracles. So Hashem did the 7 days of miracles. So it's the same exact concept. So basically, the takeaway is that it's a time to go back and realize how special we are, how special relationship we have with Kodesh Baruch Hu is, and that we are beneficiaries of that. We are here today, and we've spoken about this many times over Pesach Shurim and different things, that we are here today because of the Mesirut Nefesh of the people that preceded us. We are here today because of all the generations that had to give something up for us to be here. Right? And we would not have been here otherwise. And there was a lot of close calls in the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and Lemaisa, in every generation, Hashem found that person or those leaders or those group of people that would stand up and be there to hold it up, and then it flourishes from there. And that's the cycle, and that's where B'chol Dor V'Dor. And we shouldn't fool ourselves that it's any different. Yeah, don't fool ourselves. And the Maisa Hashem puts the people in the place that are going to stand up and rebuild the Klai Yisrael, make sure that the eternality of Klai Yisrael stays on. And that's the lesson of Chanukah, I think, in the big picture. And that's the connection to Sukkot. And I think it's a big chizuk that we think about when we're lighting the candles and we're saying the Ma'oz Tzur, The idea is to remind them, there's Nisim always. That's how we're here. We're here because of the Nisim, and we're here because of the Mesirut Nefesh, that people stood up for to make sure that we could be here, and I think it should provide us for a big chizuk going into the days of Chanukah, Be'ezrat Hashem.